Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know, yesterday was the annual commemoration of Father's Day, but what you may not know is how Father's Day got started. It was inaugurated in the 20th century as a complement to Mother's Day, and of course, the intent was to celebrate fathers and male parenting. Anna Jarvis, you probably may know that name. She was the successful promoter of Mother's Day in Grafton, West Virginia, the first observance though of a Father's Day was held on July 5th of 1908 in Fairmont, West Virginia, in the Williams Memorial Methodist Episcopal Church South, now known as Central United Methodist Church. And Grace Golden Clayton was mourning the loss of her father when in December of 1907, the Monaga mining disaster killed 361 men, 250 of whom were fathers. And of course, the death of those fathers left around 1,000 fatherless children. So Grafton suggested that her pastor, Robert Thomas Webb, honor all those fathers. Well, Clayton's event did not have much impact outside Fairmont, West Virginia, but then on June 1910, a Father's Day celebration was held at the YMCA in Spokane, Washington, by Sonora Smart Dodd. Her father, a Civil War veteran, William Jackson Smart, was a single parent who raised six children. She was a member of the Old Centenary Presbyterian Church, which is now known as Knox Presbyterian Church, where she first proposed an idea for a Father's Day. And after hearing a sermon about Jarvis Mother's Day in 1909, she told her pastor that fathers should have a similar holiday to honor them. And although she initially suggested June 5th, which was her father's birthday, the pastors of that area didn't have enough time to prepare their Father's Day sermons. And so the celebration was deferred to the third Sunday in June. Several local clergymen accepted the idea, and so on June 19 of 1910, the first Father's Day sermons honoring fathers were presented throughout the city, and thus Father's Day was born. Well, with that, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I am Dave Kistler, and I'm joined today by Dr. Gary Dull, and we have a very special guest that we'll bring aboard in segment number three, but for now, I want to tell you our theme today is going to be this: Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. Let me repeat that. Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. Gary, I believe this topic is critical for several reasons, not the least of which is something that just literally ignited over the weekend, and that's this immigration debate that's enveloping our nation. And of course, it was timed to the Father's Day commemoration. There were protests over separation of children from their parents temporarily. And here's what the president said about all of this over the weekend. And I quote, he said, "I hate that children are being taken away. The Democrats have to change their law. That's their law. Now, I want the laws to be beautiful, humane, but strong. I don't want bad people coming in." He went on and said this, quote, "We can solve the problem in one meeting. Tell the Democrats and your friends to call me." Well, we're going to be discussing some of that, the ramifications of immigration policy, a lot of which is being blamed unjustly on the president. But for now, I want to discuss what we celebrated yesterday, and that's Father's Day. Friends, I don't mind telling you I had a great father. Gary, you have a great father. And so I want to ask you this. What did your father do that has most influenced your life for good and for God?
Well, Dr. Dave, I would say that my father, Gorman Dull, was just himself. He was real. But one of the things that I can bring up that I think of all of the time is his emphasis on Scripture and the local church. My dad always taught me the significance of knowing the Word of God and being involved in the local church. And I kind of think that that made a very deep impact upon my life. As a matter of fact, Dave, I've said over the years that one of the reasons why I believe that I'm a churchman, and I use that phrase in a unique sense, is because of the fact that my dad not only saw that I was brought up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, which he taught me on a regular basis, but also he saw that I got involved in the local church, which has really shaped my life. But in addition to that, Dave, he lived a clear testimony for Jesus Christ. I mentioned yesterday in my message, my Father's Day message, as I related to my dad, that I was close to him for 18 years before I went off to Bible college and learned a lot from him then. But now, the past 19 years, and you know this, David, the past 19 years, he has been involved with our church. I've been his pastor. Can you imagine pastoring your father? And he's been on staff here and music and senior citizens and all. And in the past 19 years, I've learned more about my dad's testimony and walk with the Lord than I knew in the first 18 years. Maybe I could put it this way. In the first 18 years, I saw it. In these last 19 years, I've experienced it. And I'm thankful for the influence not only that my dad had on me in those first 18 years, but what he still has on me this very day.
Well, Gary, I know your dad and know him well, and he's one of the finest men I've ever met. And I don't, I'm not saying that just because you're my friend. It's the truth. Your dad is a tremendous man. Your mom is a wonderful lady. And I had a great dad as well. And I don't mind telling you this. One of the things that is most vivid in my memory is something that I shared with pastors all over the United States over the weekend in a short video post that I sent them in light of Father's Day coming up yesterday. And that is, my dad was a very courageous man. He was not afraid to speak the truth in love, but he would speak the truth. And I remember vividly, we lived in the mountains of North Carolina. We had an attempt by some entities within our community, within our county, to bring liquor by the drink in. And my dad got on radio. He had a weekly radio program, and he named the name of the local moonshiner, called him by name and said, "You think, you know, what we have now is bad just with moonshine whiskey? You think it's going to be improved at all by the presence of liquor by the drink? It will not." And I remember my mom being greatly concerned that my dad was going to get shot and killed or lured somewhere and killed because he called out the name of the local bootlegger. Now, he didn't do it in an unkind way, but my dad was just fearless. And he passed that on to my brother and I and left us a great legacy of courageously standing for the truth. And so I'm greatly appreciative of my father, and I thank God so much for him. Gary, I heard some of this even yesterday. You hear it frequently. You know, let's say, you know, some men come to faith in Christ later in life, or maybe they've been nominal Christians, haven't really been aggressive in their walk with the Lord, but they get serious about God later in life, and they feel like, you know, my kids are, for the most part, grown, and the time of me influencing them is past. Let me ask you this. Is it ever too late for a dad to have an impact on his family for that which is right?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, when you read particularly the Old Testament scriptures, we find that as men, we are to teach our children and our children's children. You know, so you're looking at three generations there, particularly the father, the son, and the grandchildren. We've got the responsibility to make that type of an impact upon our younger, the generations that follow us. But the fact of the matter is, David, we never cease to make an impact upon our children. We must make certain that we are making a positive impact as Christian dads.
Well, I am in complete agreement with you, my friend. It's never too late for a dad to have an impact on his children, be they younger or older, and certainly to have an impact on his family by leading them toward righteousness. Well, when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion of this vitally important topic, Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. We're going to talk about it with respect to the immigration issue as well, because that's a hot topic right now. I don't want you to miss any of this conversation coming up on Stand in the Gap today.
Here's a thank you note from Tricia, who listens to Stand in the Gap on our anchor station, WFYL, in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. She said, "I'm a repeat donor and a regular listener to Stand in the Gap from noon until 1 p.m. APN President Sam Rohr and his knowledgeable guests open my eyes every time I listen to them. I enjoy and am so blessed hearing about current life issues from their strong biblical and constitutional perspective." Well, Tricia, thanks for your kind words. Your comments speak for tens of thousands of others just like you all across the country. And we're so glad for the freedom to communicate the truth so people like you who want to know the truth can do so and be confident in recommending us to your friends. Thanks also for being a monthly partner and helping set a model for others. We depend on the gifts of God's people and the listeners to our radio and now our TV program to continue. May God bless you, Tricia. Now, if you've not written to us or partnered with us like Tricia, would you do so right now? Just go to standinthegapradio.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Well, the phrase man up owes its early popularization to the American sport of football, where it originally had a more technical meaning relating to man-to-man pass defense. In 1985, the New York Jets head coach Joe Walton praised the work of his defensive coordinator to a local newspaper, saying this, quote, "They're playing the kind of defense that I wanted and that Bud Carson teaches. Aggressive, man up, getting after it, hustling all over the field," end quote. And it's actually believed by wordsmiths, that is the phrase man up, to be the result of this phrase from the rodeo circuit, cowboy up, a phrase that has been used in rodeo circles for decades now, which basically means this, get tough. Well, we're using the term man up today to say, dads, it's time to get in the game. Your leadership is needed now more than ever. And again, that's our topic today, man up time, father's leadership desperately needed. And we're going to be talking about this in light of what's happening right now. If you're watching the news, it's literally burning up the airwaves, these detention centers that are housing children and supposedly separating them from their parents as these illegal immigrants, fathers, illegal immigrant fathers, mothers bringing their children or attempting to the United States of America, but doing it in an illegal fashion. What's the father's responsibility there? And all of that's going to be a topic of discussion in the latter part of the program today. But for now, Gary, I want to go to you because we're talking about this in light of the Father's Day celebration yesterday. What areas of life and relationships are fathers most needed today? And what I mean by that is this, they're needed to do what?
You know, David, that's a very important question, and I actually thought about that question in preparing my message for yesterday for Father's Day. And I think that if we are looking at a relationship that is really needed, number one, by fathers, by dads, by men in general, is to have a good spiritual relationship and a good walk with the Lord. Yesterday, I spoke from 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 13 and 14, on five challenges for a godly man. Where it says, watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit ye like men, which basically means be mature, grow up, be strong, and let all your things be done with charity. And under each one of those points, I asked the question, how can this be done? And every one of them really went back to having a right relationship with God. And I think that probably one of the things that we need most amongst men, and particularly fathers, is an active, growing, developing relationship with God on a day-by-day basis. And then, of course, you know, there's got to be a good relationship with his wife, with his children, with his family, with the local church. But David, I really think that it all goes back to having a relationship with God so that the dad can sense God's leading, follow God's leading, and be used of God in his life to the glory of God.
Yes, Gary, and that phrase that you quoted there from the passage you quoted, quit ye like men, the word quit doesn't mean what it means today to give up. It means act. Act like men.
Act maturely.
Act maturely as grown-up men is basically the concept there. And Gary, I agree. I think the things you share there are beyond powerful. Of course, again, I know your dad. I know he's a very dedicated, consistent Christian father, has been all of your life. And I'd love for you to do this. Share with us, if you could, from your growing up years, something your dad did that was the most extraordinary example of fatherly leadership.
I tell you, there are many things that come to my mind, and I'd like to hear the same from you as well. But I remember we always got old cars. When I say old cars, back then I'm talking about an automobile that was 3 or 4 years old, you know. Today, an automobile that's 3 or 4 years old isn't even broken in. That's a discussion for another time, I guess. But I remember the very first brand new car my dad bought. It was a Chevrolet Nova, a 1970 Chevrolet Nova, bright yellow with a black vinyl top. It was beautiful. And I got the impression, David, that if I ever got one little scratch on that car, I would be killed. Not really, but you know what I'm trying to say. I knew I would be in trouble. Well, I took it after 6 months to the dealership to have them do some things on it. And I had a friend with me. His name was Dave, Dave Johnson. And on the way home, I hit a slick, an oil slick, and the car started to spin, hit a rock cliff on the one side, bounced off of that, went over the guardrails, down over a bank, and we landed in the creek. And the car was a mess. And they pulled up that, they took the car, pulled it up out of the ditch, the creek, took it back to the dealership, set it beside another car just like it, that made it look worse. And it was terrible. Well, the guy that we bought the car off of, or Dad bought the car off of, was a longtime family friend. So I went in, and his name was Lewis, and I said, you know, Lewis, I've got to tell my dad, and he's going to kill me. So Lewis said, do you want me to call him? I said, yeah, please call him. But I listened on the other line, the extension line. He called and said, Gorman, we have a problem down here. And Dad's response was, what happened? Did the car fall off the lift? I don't know what made him ask that question. And Dad and Lewis said, no, it didn't fall off the lift. Your son wrecked it, and it looks like it's demolished. And I sat there waiting for the response. And the first thing my dad said, didn't take long, the first thing he said is, are they hurt? Are they okay? Meaning Dave, my friend, and myself. And Lewis said, no, they're fine. And then Dad said, well, what are they doing? Then I popped up and I said, I'm on my way to California. And Dad said, well, why? I said, because I just wrecked your brand new car. His answer was, you are much more important than this car. Cars can be replaced, but lives cannot. And he came and picked me up. He bought another car, which he bought a 1973 Rambler Ambassador. Remember those old big tanks? He bought that. A steering wheel was about 5 feet wide, I think, in circumference. And he made me drive it home. He never chased me once, never corrected me once. And I always got the impression that if I put a scratch on that car, I'd be in big trouble. He has never to this day said anything about that accident. I learned then the love of a dad. You know, I really thought if I knocked out a headlight, I'd be in trouble. But I demolished the car. And Dad just was more concerned about me than the car. I learned that was a life lesson right there, Dave, of fatherly love.
You know, Gary, while we're talking about automobiles, let me cite one that comes vividly to mind with my dad. We were living in Alabama. My dad was reopening churches that had been closed across the state of Alabama, and we were out under a home mission agency located in Illinois, the state where I am this week. And they had an annual missions conference. In order to go to the conference, my dad felt like we needed to buy a newer vehicle. He had a beautiful little black and white Plymouth that was running fine. But he traded it in on a 1960 Plymouth station wagon. And I remember him later saying, you know, I didn't pray about that. I just felt like, you know, that's what we needed to do. Someone else had a station wagon that was going to the conference. So we needed one just like that. Never prayed about it. And Gary, on that trip up there, it took 30 quarts of oil on the trip back. And the joke was we'd pull into a service station and Dad would say, check the gas, but fill it up with oil. We got home. He couldn't unload the car fast enough, and his little black and white Plymouth was gone. Somebody else bought it. And I remember my dad using that to teach my brother and I something. He said, boys, never again, never again will I make any purchase of any size without praying it through. And every car my dad purchased after that, he prayed it through, and he'd drive cars to 200,000 and 300,000 miles because he bought them because it was in the will of God. And, sure. You know, he wasn't buying it for the wrong motivation. And that taught me a lesson. Everything. We pray about everything, but especially big purchases like that. And it left an indelible impression on me as a father. It's an example of great leadership. And Gary, we have a lot to be thankful for. Can you do this, Gary? I know we've got to wrap up this segment here pretty quickly, and we're going to move into a discussion of immigration, but give an exhortation to fathers, both older and younger, as to how much their leadership can dramatically, at this point in their life, affect the future of their family.
Well, certainly. And, you know, I turn to Ephesians, and Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, where it says, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And I think, David, that, you know, even though it says bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, which means to teach and correct, I think that one of the things is that no matter how old a father is, he should take the opportunity to nurture and even to admonish or to correct if it has to be done. But that concept of nurturing is very important. And I think that a dad, no matter what the age may be, needs to have that walk with and relationship with the Lord that's growing in such a way that no matter how old his children may be, he can nurture them in the things of the Lord. You know, yesterday, David, and I should have brought the card with me to the studio here, but my son Mike gave me a card. And on that Father's Day card, he said something like this: "Dad, I've always appreciated you, but now that I'm older, I appreciate you as a dad more than ever before." And I was humbled. But you see, we can always impact our children for Christ, and we should do that in everything that we do, no matter what their age may be.
Well, my son yesterday, I got a text. He said, "Dad, you're my hero." My son actually posted it on Facebook. He said, "Dad, you're my hero." And I tell you what, that's a humbling thing to hear, but it's a blessed thing to hear. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to be men that lead. And our theme today is Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. And it's nowhere more needed than in the lives of immigrant families. We'll be talking about that after the break. Don't miss it. Stand in the Gap today.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Over the weekend, Democrats went into fits over the temporary separation of children from their illegal immigrant parents. And I want to stop and underscore that. The operative word here is illegal immigrant parents. And of course, the Democrats blamed the president for, quote unquote, dividing families. Now, this was the accusation, notwithstanding the fact that the Obama administration did the same thing in a major way. Now, what I want to deal with in this segment and in the final segment of the program today is this topic of immigration in light of our theme today, Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said the policy, the policy being implemented right now by the Trump administration, is a result of the administration not sending children to jail with their parents. Now, I want you to listen to what he said. Quote, "Non-citizens who cross our borders unlawfully," and again, that's the operative word, "between our ports of entry with children are not an exception." In other words, they're not an exception to the law. Sessions went on and said this: "They are the ones who broke the law. They are the ones who endangered their own children on their trek. The United States, on the other hand, goes to extraordinary lengths to protect them while their parents go through a short detention period," end quote. And then White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said this, quote, "Illegal alien families are the product of the same legal loopholes that Democrats refuse to close. And these laws are the same that have been on the books for over a decade," end quote. Now, friends, that is true. So those that are trying to blame what's happening currently on the Trump administration are refusing to realize that the law, as it's currently being applied, zero tolerance is the term the Trump administration has chosen to use. Basically, it's this: they're implementing the law without tolerating anybody coming here illegally. The laws have been on the books for actually more than a decade. And the Obama administration operated according to them. Even back into some of the Bush years, they operated according to these same laws. And so what Sarah Huckabee Sanders is saying is, if you want to change the law, change the law. But this is the law. We have to follow the law if we're going to do the right thing. And we may have to temporarily keep children from their parents while their parents are serving some jail time and they're being processed through and a determination is being made as to what to do with them, either deport them or whatever. But it's not a permanent separation. So, Gary, I want to go to you before I bring in our special guest that's there in the studio with you. What Attorney General Jeff Sessions said, in my estimation, Gary, is true. People cross our borders unlawfully. They should not be an exception to the law just because they happen to have children in their family. And until they can be appropriately and lawfully processed, their children may have to not go to jail with them. That wouldn't be appropriate. So they have to stay in these detention centers temporarily. Do you see anything wrong with that? Because personally, I don't.
Well, I don't. And I think that what Jeff Sessions was saying, and of course, as you recall, he made reference to Romans chapter 13, where the government has the responsibility to have laws that stand for that which is good and stand against that which is evil. Now, if a law is wrong, or if there are wrong connotations to that law, then it needs to be changed and adjusted. And I think that that, of course, is one of the things that Donald Trump wants to do. But in what Jeff Sessions said, or in what the United States of America is doing, is not trying to break up families. We are not trying to take children away from their parents. You know, we had a discussion last night in our summer ministries team Bible study before church, and this subject came up. And I went around the room asking the folks, you know, what they thought about it. And in reality, I think all of these young people came back and saying, it's the parents' responsibility. Why would a parent put their child into a situation where it could cause them to be separated from their children and or be in some kind of a detention place for a while, where indeed those facilities where these children are, they're okay and the children are being taken care of. And as you said, it's just a temporary period of time, but it goes back to a child's responsibility. You've got three children, Dave. Would you send them across the border, for instance, or create a situation whereby you knew that you could be separated from them and that in any way, shape, or form that might affect them emotionally? No, you would not do that. And I think that the issue here is not the children or what our Justice Department is doing in upholding the law, but it's the fact that we've got a lot of parents who are the alien parents, the foreign parents, the strangers, as it were, who are not following this through in the biblical responsible manner.
Gary, a lot to unpack with what you just said, and I'm going to do that in just a minute. But I want to welcome to the program a guest that's seated in your studio. His name is Micah Klaus. He was one of those young people that are part of your summer ministry program that was in that meeting last night, and I know he's got some insightful things to say. Before I go to him, I just want to kind of unpack a little bit of what you said. We've got a number of issues here. We've got illegal immigrants, parents coming across the border, as you so eloquently said, Gary, bringing their children with them, and yet they want to blame the United States immigration policy for being the problem. No, the United States immigration policy and laws are not the problem. The problem is when someone comes here illegally, they automatically, by doing so, submit themselves to the laws of this country. If that means their children being temporarily, and that's the important word, temporarily separated from them, because they don't want children in a jail cell. Instead, they put them in a detention center, which is not the Ritz-Carlton. But Gary, if you and I went into another country illegally, we would go to jail. And no one should expect to have, you know, accommodations like they've come from, or accommodations that are, you know, like a five-star hotel or anything else, if they've come into our country illegally. I mean, this is insane. But the responsibility, as you so adequately and appropriately said, rests on the parents, primarily the fathers. No, Gary, I would never submit my children to a situation like that if I thought they were going to be separated from me or something like that. In fact, I would never go into another country illegally. I just would not do it. And I've traveled to countries all over the world, as have you. And we just go in according to the laws of that country. So, Micah, evidently, as you guys sat around the table last night and Gary came to you, you had some interesting insights. So let me welcome you to the program and then ask you to share your insights on this topic, coming from a young man who's 20 years old.
Thank you, Mr. Kistler. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. And I think it's fitting that we talk about this just celebrating Father Day's weekend, because the idea of paternal leadership is part and parcel of solving the problem of these border issues, as these children are ultimately children of fathers. And like you've mentioned, this has been the law under the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals for years. But now I think with this outrage coming towards President Trump and other Republicans, it's because there are unliked figureheads where we can now kind of accuse non-compassion towards them of dividing these families. But as it's been mentioned, this has been the law. And instead of just overturning it, you know, like G.K. Chesterton says, before you tear down a fence, you have to know why it was put up. And it's because of very complex reasons, because of things like, you know, how far do the branches of compassion mingle with the written hard law? And that's a hard question, because as Jeff Sessions quoted Romans 13, those who are in control of this country, we are to obey them. We are to obey those laws written and put in place for a reason. Yet at the same time, you do have compassion toward these people because they are children. And so it's a much more complex issue, especially when you factor in the idea of financial burdens and also Mexico's own responsibility towards its people. And so it's a very complex issue, but not one where we should be accusing people of non-compassion, but one where we really see what's at the heart of the matter.
Eloquently said, my friend, phenomenally eloquently said. And let me just say this, and the gist of what you're getting at is this, and Brother Gary touched on it as well. If there is a law that is being applied in a way that we now realize, you know, the situation is such that the law needs to be changed, then laws can be changed, but they're changed legislatively. The president cannot just decide and overrule a particular law. It needs to be done congressionally and legislatively. And I think that's what the president's getting to. Look, this law can be changed. It can be changed in one day if we can get Democrat support for it, because we have to have Democrat support in order to get the votes to change it. But see, they won't come to the table. And Gary, that's part of the perplexing issue with me. I'm not trying to make this partisan politics here, but when these people appear to want to have an issue over which to attack the president rather than resolving the issue, that's a problem for me. And then I want to ask you this specifically. What about the comment that came from the wife of our former president, George W. Bush, when his bride said, I think what is happening now under President Trump with these children being separated from their parents is immoral. That's the term she used. It's immoral. Now, other people have seized on the left on her comment, and they're calling it immoral. They're calling it unconstitutional. They're calling it unconscionable. They're calling it a lot of things. But is the enforcement of immigration law as it currently stands, is that, Gary, an immoral act?
Well, it absolutely is not an immoral act. And I'm kind of ashamed to hear that she made that particular statement. You know, David, the United States of America is a nation that was founded upon law. We are a nation of laws. And of course, if we go back and study it through, we see that our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, both of those were based solely in the pages of Scripture. And, you know, we were founded on natural law, on moral law. And that really is what our Constitution is all about. And that's what our laws on immigration are about. And it goes back to this concept, what is legal and illegal? I'm ashamed to think that we are living in a nation where we are just taking away of all laws and doing that which is right in our own hearts. That reminds me of the days of Judges, doesn't it? We need to get back to the laws of the land that are biblically based.
Powerfully well said, my friend. It reminds me of the days of Judges. Exactly. Well, friends, our topic of discussion today is Man Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. And it's all the more needed in the immigrant community. And when we come back, I'm going to share some statistics with you that will stun you and help you understand why our president is so reticent to let people into the country in an unmitigated fashion. Don't miss this conversation.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Men Up Time, Father's Leadership Desperately Needed. That is our topic of discussion today. And friends, in light of the immigration debate that is literally lighting up the United States right now, it's all over social media. It's all over all of the network and cable media news reporting. There's something that the federal government did today in light of that, and they released some statistics that they don't normally ever release. In fact, I don't think they've ever been released in this fashion. But in order to help the American people understand why The Trump administration is doing what it's doing in accordance with the law, not just laws that are current to the Trump administration, but longstanding law that goes back over 10 years. Here's why they're doing what they're doing. Here's why they're reticent to allow people into the United States in an unmitigated fashion. DACA, D-A-C-A, that refers to the deferred action against, you know, children of those coming into this country. And a lot of the DACA children and the DACA recipients, as they're sometimes called, are certainly illegal. They're coming here illegally. Well, it's interesting to me that the government released today that there have been 60,000 arrests of DACA individuals who've come into this country. They've been arrested because they've committed anything from somewhat insignificant crime to absolutely incredibly violent crime, and most of it has been of the violent nature. 60,000 arrests. 10 of those 60,000 arrests have been arrests because of murders. That is, people allowed into this country have committed murders of American citizens while they've been here. So if you want to understand why our president is a little hesitant, or a lot hesitant, to let people into this country in an unmitigated way and to do what some on the left want to be done, and that is no retaining of any of these people, no deporting of any of these people, none of this should take place. They should just come across the border and be released into the general American populace. The president says absolutely no way, zero tolerance with respect to that. And here's why: 60,000 of these folks have been arrested for committing crime, most of it violent crime, and at least 10 murders have taken place. So we have a problem here, and rather than using it as a political ploy to attack a president that you don't like, let's sit down and deal with it. If the law needs to be changed or tweaked in some way, then let's legislatively do that. Let's not make it a political football. Now, Micah, I want to go to you. Your comments in the prior segment were so powerful. Any additional insights you might have with respect to this issue from the perspective of a young man who's a very intelligent, very wise 20-year-old? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, just a quick comment. As much political tangledness this current situation is making, I think Christians should really take this opportunity, as this is the perfect opportunity to inject a word about compassion, because those who may be declaiming those who are talking about these detention camps are also those who may support abortion. And at the same time, we have to think about this double standard of compassion, because every poor immigrant child was once an unborn child. And so whether of Mexican or American descent, I think this is the perfect opportunity to inject this idea of compassion towards all children, not just on the border, but in the home front, where we can have compassion on these unborn children who are just as well as human beings as those who they are so talking about in this current situation.
Excellent point, Micah. Instead of selective compassion and selective outrage, we need consistent compassion across the board with all children. That is an outstanding point that you're making. Gentlemen, let me do this. I want to lay out what has been proposed by one Virginia congressman as being a solution to our immigration issues, and that congressman is Bob Goodlatte. He is very frequently in the news, but he's proposed a bill that many are saying stands no chance whatsoever of passing. But here are the components of the bill that he believes, and I concur with him. I think this is a well-written bill. Let me just hit the highlights of it. I think it could solve our immigration problems and this immigration debate issue in a good way. What he's proposed is this. In his bill, there would be an end to the diversity program. It ends the visa lottery green card program. It would end chain migration. In other words, spouses, family members of some that are here automatically get to come. It would end that. It would reduce overall immigration levels. Right now, we have almost 1.1 million people being allowed into this country every year. And what Mr. Goodlatte is proposing is reducing that to about 260,000 a year, a significant decrease down to about 25%. Increase immigration levels of skilled workers. In other words, people that can come here and bring something to the table. Visa security, build the border wall, advanced technology in order to deal with those that are coming here illegally, secure ports of entry, more boots on the ground, use our National Guard, biometric entry exit system, e-verify, crackdown on sanctuary cities, And on and on and on I could go. He's also a big supporter of what's been called Kate's Law, the Kate Steinle situation where she was killed by an illegal immigrant. Gary, these seem to me to be very workable solutions to our immigration problem. They're not just workable, but they're sane and sensible as well. Your thoughts?
And very practical. You know, there are 21 points there. And I think that those 21 points are points that could very easily be put into operation. I mean, Goodlatte did a very good job in putting these things together. The problem is, you've got Democrats, you've got liberals, and we're not trying to make this partisan. We're just observing what's going on. You've got Democrats and liberals that no matter what a conservative or a Republican or, in another case, our president comes up with, they just don't want to go along with it. They're bringing division. But, you know, I asked the question, why is that the case? And I think it goes back to several years ago, David, when in the National Democratic Convention, and I believe it was down in Florida, they voted God out of that convention. Do you remember that?
Gary, I do, but it was in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, in fact, I was there right after that happened on the ground. So, yes, sir, I do.
Yeah, the Republican was in Tampa at that time. So, you're right. It comes out of your state. It's your fault. But here's the point. They voted God out of their agenda. And I think they did more than just, you know, say we're not going to pray or whatever the case. The liberals are going a secular, godless way. They cannot understand truth. They don't want to understand truth. And consequently, they don't want to understand or even submit to good law. And I think that that's the direction that they're going. And that's why we need to uphold the law based on the scriptures and get men and women in office who are going to do that. Listen, you put God out of the picture, you lose all moral and natural understanding. And that's what the Democrats and the liberals have done.
Gary, let me just follow up your excellent comment with this little bit of comment and a little bit of an admonition. I read through the Democratic Party platform leading into the 2016 elections. And Gary, I'd never done that before in its entirety. I'd never done that. I read the Republican, read the Democrat, and I'm just going to word it this way. It was so heartbreaking, so distressing to have read through the Democratic Party platform and feel like for 55 minutes as I read 66 pages of content, I felt like my mind and my heart had been taken on a 55-minute tour through a sewer. Everything that God is against, they were for. Virtually everything God's for, they were against. Gary, you cannot make decisions like that and basically, whether it's officially at your convention in Charlotte, expel God and then try to put him back in, or whether with your policies you expel God and expect anything good to come of that. It's just not going to happen. Now, I'm going to go to you for a comment, and then I want you to close us out in prayer very quickly, if you would.
Well, it's just like our friend Louis Gohmert said, what's down there in D.C. is not a swamp, it's a sewer. And Father, I ask and pray that you will indeed give our leaders the responsibility, the insight to your word, that they might make responsible decisions that uphold your law. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Man up time. Father's leadership desperately needed across the board, certainly among immigrant fathers as well. Thank you for joining us today on Stand in the Gap Today. Thank you, Micah Klaus, for being our guest. Great job. And friends, join us tomorrow for our next installment, Stand in the Gap.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit StandInTheGapRadio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.